Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, guiding you to a career in financial services. This episode originally aired on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Make sure you join me each week as I share with you information on how to become a financial professional and the things you should be considering as you navigate down this career path. Without further ado, here's this week's episode. Hey everybody, this is Dominique, the YouTube CFP, coming at you with another episode. And I got a very special guest. Whitney Hansen is joining us with the Money Nerds podcast. Very colorful, entertaining collection of what I would call stories for the everyday person. And so Whitney, thank you for joining us.
I am so stoked to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Man, you were so gracious when we first met through Instagram. It's just so funny how makes everything so much smaller nowadays. But no, I really appreciate that. You're fresh off of FinCon. Tell me about that a little bit.
Oh, it was exhausting in a great way. 2,500 people. Everybody gets together. The conversations are amazing. But the downside is if you are a very introverted person, I'm not. I tend to be a little bit more introverted after the conference. But if you are an introverted person, you have to put yourself out there. And so that is one of the best conferences by far. Conversation is incredible. You meet some people with some killer stories, but you will lose your voice. So I just got my voice back today. Thank goodness.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, thank you. You're even more, more kudos to you for jumping on right after. I saw the pictures because I'm doing some travel that was already scheduled. I unfortunately was not able to make FinCon this year, but I'm definitely going to put it on my list for next year because it looks like it was so much fun.
Long Beach. That's where we're going to be. So extend so we can go to Disneyland.
Oh, that's actually a great idea. And hopefully with this empty nest, I will have more money in my pocket, but probably not.
Not with that attitude. You got to cut the cord, man.
Oh my gosh. That's a whole nother podcast. We'll talk about that later.
No doubt, right? That'll be for my show.
Yeah. What are some takeaways? You said you have really great conversations, and today we want to talk about, I think what we chatted about briefly was like this industry is changing so much and financial coaching, which I'm happy about, is giving the industry a much needed facelift or at least some additional perspective. So I'm sure you met a lot of those people at the conference. Kind of give us some of your maybe big ahas and takeaways.
I'd say that was one of the most interesting pieces is I've gone to this conference now 5 years in a row. And this is the first year where I've heard more people introduce themselves as a financial coach. And the cool thing about it that I think is interesting for you and your listeners is a lot of these people used to be financial advisors. And now they're going down the financial coaching path because, as you know, the regulation is crazy for financial advisors. And it was so fascinating to see how many people are going the financial coaching route. So just to give everybody context, let's like start with like what the heck is a financial coach? It's basically somebody that is helping people with the day-to-day of their lives. So this is stuff like budgeting, paying down debt, getting your savings account set up, education on what is retirement, but not giving retirement specifics. So I think that's kind of where a lot of financial coaches will kind of tread that line, but legally you cannot do that. As you know, you cannot do that. You can't offer insurance advice or anything like that unless you're qualified for that. But that's what a financial coach does. So they work on goals, mindset, budgeting, saving, the basics of your finances.
Yeah, I think that's so cool. I have a growing population or a community of people that I'm trying to help get their feet under them in this industry. And the non-traditional path you're talking about right now is one that's probably gained a lot of steam, I would say, in the last decade, definitely the last 5 years. And the internet making the world smaller helps that. I'm always very intrigued with new perspectives on an old idea, right? And I think that's excellent that you're seeing that. With people introducing themselves as financial coaches, like what were their platforms that they were using? Was a lot of the internet, I would imagine, or what was maybe some of the platforms that they've used to kind of get those services out there?
That's the interesting thing. Yes. So there was a combination of YouTubers that had big audiences that were then turning into financial coaches because they had so many people that were reaching out for advice. There's podcasters like myself that have been educating and then finally want to work with people one-on-one. A lot of the financial advisors that realized they were doing their clients a disservice by not offering some type of service there. So it was all across the board, but it was mostly all online. And I think that's the cool piece is we hear a financial coach and you immediately think, oh, we have to sit down in Starbucks together at my office and do all of the things, but you don't have to. You can meet virtually. And that's one of the cool pieces. One of the opportunities that I saw, so if anybody listening in is really good and very tech savvy, there's not currently a platform that works for financial coaches. There's a lot of software for advisors where you can log in and have each of your different portfolios for your clients. That doesn't really exist for financial coaches. I met one person that's doing that in Australia, nothing here in the States. So that was something where I was like, aha, if I was a tech savvy individual, I would do that. I'm not. So somebody else thrown out that idea, but it's an opportunity for sure.
No, I definitely agree with you. So, okay, so let's back up a little bit. We dove right in, but I want to know about the Money Nerds podcast, how that originated. What was that born out of? Because I know you have this, let's call it the traditional background with the accounting and the finance. And then you were like, not for me. Nope. I caught the interview you did with Miko Love, and you guys had the similar backgrounds. I was like, I got to talk about that. So talk about how the podcast started and that whole idea.
Yeah, podcast started from hearing really cool stories, but it came from my own personal experience. I graduated from Boise State University with my bachelor's in accounting, not because I loved it, because I was 3.5 years in before I realized I didn't love it and was committed. So I was like, you know what? Damn it, just got to stick it out and then keep going forward. Don't recommend that, but that's what I did.
Yeah. Got it.
Graduated with $30,000 in debt. Now, $30,000 in 2010 was a lot of money. It's a lot of money even in 2019. But I knew immediately that it was heavy because I felt how it was making decisions for me. So even down to what jobs I was going to take was completely dependent on my student debt. How can I pay this off as quickly as possible? And so I didn't like that. So I put together my own plan, very, very novel plan of budgeting and working a lot, you know, just super crazy stuff. Just hustle and paid it all off in 10 months and then started helping people do the same thing. And so that's where the whole personal finance business kind of blossomed. But the podcast came directly from FinCon because I was talking to people with really cool stories and hearing the way they were approaching life and retirement and just making all these different decisions. And there wasn't really anybody sharing those kinds of stories. It was always the expert level, you know, the Pat Flynn's and the Tim Ferriss's of the world. Those were the stories that were being told. And I think those are powerful, but the day-to-day stuff wasn't there. And so that's really why I launched the podcast, is I wanted to highlight people that were doing cool things in their everyday life. And that's where it all stemmed from.
That's really cool inspiration though, too, because I think a lot of people have those ideas about, podcasts. I have the opportunity to coach, you know, advisors every month, probably about 4 to 5, right now. And I think a lot of them don't want to come out of their shell for a couple of reasons. The first is, okay, can I say this? You know, the regulation part that we talked about. Yes. And then the other part is just not wanting to really put themselves out there, because there is this level of, I will call it, you know, fake prestige that you have to have as an advisor, that you've already made it, you've never made any mistakes, and you know your clients are looking up to you. And so therefore you kind of feel a little weird doing these, you know, podcast or Instagram movie or you know, all this kind of stuff that totally doesn't seem like it fits, right? But I think that's what people want to hear, right? You know, you probably heard this over and over again.
Oh, totally. I think that's the biggest misconception. And I think what we're going to see, the people that go out of business are the ones that feel like they have to be perfect all the time. The ones that feel like I can't show up to a client meeting in jeans and a t-shirt because then I'm not professional. Now, if that's your brand and you do that, great. Dress up all you want. For sure, be authentic to who you are. But it's the people that aren't being authentic and feel like they can't show that they're a human and they make mistakes and they're not perfect. I really believe we're going to see those businesses go under, because in today's world, millennials, especially largest generation we've ever seen, they want people that are relatable. And unfortunately, the relatable pieces that a lot of advisors come to the table with of being kind of stuffy and perfect and jargony, that's not going to work. It's not enough. And so I think that's a really missed opportunity. And I think we're seeing the advisors that are succeeding today are the ones that are not using as much jargon, spending more time teaching and really highlighting the other areas of the industry that are kind of confusing. They're making it simple to understand and they're being authentic. Those are the ones that are kicking butt.
No, I love that you say that, because I think one of the things that was my aha when I started my firm was that I want relationship. I don't want a big gargantuan firm. I want to treat everybody like family, because at the end of the day, we're all humans, right? The whole point about the education is great and the information is great. However, everything's at the fingertips right now. Google, YouTube, you can get all that stuff already. So like my value proposition does not need to be how to rebalance your portfolio or asset allocate. That's just not a value anymore. But how do you feel when your kids leave the house and you now have just you and your spouse, and now you got these other decisions, like life takes a turn. Like, can you pick up the phone and call your advisor and talk about that? Right. So I think those are the more salient points of this profession going forward. I may be wrong, but I think there's a lot of people like yourself that agree with me that, you know, people are craving that relationship.
They are. Well, even like what we were talking about, you're saying you're going to be an empty nester. And just at the end of the day, if anything else, from a sales perspective, we buy based on emotions. And when I feel like, oh my God, I'm also an empty nester, my kids just moved out too, you actually understand what I'm going through. That builds that relationship, like you said. And more than anything, it builds that lifelong customer. And I think if you're thinking just the lifetime value of a customer, that alone should be enough to make you at least say, how can I be more relatable so that we have a connection point?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you're preaching. So Whitney Hansen here, joining us with how financial coaching is kind of changing the industry. So I want to pivot a little bit. Let's talk about how you've like kind of come into this space and you've decided to use your podcast as a platform for what you do. But there's obviously different ways to do it, because some people are going to look at this and like, Dominique, I'm not good on video. I can't do the whole podcast thing. And that's right. Good. Don't do that. Yeah. However, talk about some ways, some platforms that you think, you know, people that are aspiring to go down the road of financial coach that they can use in order to kind of get their name out there and start doing the things that will attract clients to them.
Yeah. So this is twofold. I'll tell you the platforms that I think are easy wins for right now. And then I'll tell you the platforms I think we should all keep our eyes on. Perfect. And so the first ones that I think are good platforms are, yes, podcasting. I know it seems like a really scary thing. The good thing is you're behind a microphone. So if you don't have a face for video, this is always the running joke in podcasting, then you're great. Don't worry about it. So you can be really authentic. You can be really nerdy. You can be whoever the heck you are through your podcast and not feel so awkward with video. That's an awesome way to go. 51% of the US has actually listened to a podcast. 49% have not. So there's still a lot of growth. There's a lot of opportunity to get noticed in that area. Video, I think at the end of the day, man, even if you don't think you're good on video, I think you need to get practice. I really do. I know that's me being biased, but everybody is going down the route of video. And in today's world, unless you have a business where it's a local business and you're teaching workshops locally, that could be awesome. But if you want to attract clients from all over, video is the fastest way to build trust. It really is.
Let me just say, because I'm going to play this clip over and over to the people that I coach, because everybody's like so afraid of video. I had two ahas. The first was, I'm trying to get people to, you know, feel authentic with me, but I'm hiding behind a microphone and I'm not showing my face. That was my first aha. And this is why I got on video. Cause I'm like, I'm asking people to trust me with their money, but I'm not even showing my face.
You're not showing up. Yeah. Oh, that's huge.
And then the thing that you just said though, about, you know, even just kind of practicing, cause sometimes you have to do it afraid. I look at some of the very first stuff I did, and right now I would probably consider myself maybe a 6 on a scale of 1 to 10. Like the first stuff was horrible, but nobody's going to watch that stuff anyways. Right?
They don't.
So you got time to practice.
Yes, you do. When I started doing YouTube forever ago before the podcast, and it took me 2 months, which I'm humiliated about, 2 months to publish my first video that got maybe 20 views, of which 15 were probably me. So I'm like, what the, why was I so concerned about that? We're so afraid of what everybody's going to think when at the end of the day, nobody's freaking watching. So you don't have to be concerned.
Oh, your Instagram story just said it, because is it you can't or you won't, right?
Because you at can't the end versus of the day, won't.
Yeah. Like I think one of the things that has helped some of the people I've seen that have been most successful that I read about or whatnot, they've made a conscious decision, a very intentional decision to like, I'm going to do this behavior whether or not I like it or not. Like, it doesn't yep. matter what I like. I'm just going to do it. And the consistency and the discipline is going to get me the reps that I need in order to feel confident about it. And I think at some point, you Absolutely. Just got to do that.
You do. And to be fair, video, podcasting, all of this stuff, even being a great advisor, it's a skill that you learn over time. You're not going to be perfect. So if you're like, oh, I'm not good on video, how do you know? You haven't given yourself the chance to practice and to try and improve your skill. There's plenty of free resources out there that will help you. But don't discourage or diminish this just because you haven't really given it the fair shot. I think everybody can be great on video. I do believe that. I think it's a harder platform to learn, but I think it's important. I really do. And I think if you can get into that flow, eventually you'll get really good at it if you practice.
No, I agree. So podcasting, the audio portion, the videos, those are the two platforms that are probably out there. You named a couple that may kind of be behind the scenes.
Yep. And then, of course, the traditional blog. I think if you are a phenomenal writer, you have really interesting, unique perspectives. Blogging is not dead. It's still very much alive. And I think there's still a lot of opportunity for growth for you to share your own ideas. Ideally, you're doing a blog in combination with some type of a podcast or video embedded within that blog post. I think that's the most biggest bang for your buck that you can get. And then if those platforms are not for you and you're trying to grow your firm, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you have to embrace this. Like, you can probably do other things, but those are the fastest way to scale your business. And if you're not willing to embrace that, you probably aren't going to have a business.
Well, it's not 2001 anymore where you can buy Google AdWords for, you know, like pennies on the dollar. So
no.
You might actually have to do a little bit of work here. No, yeah. I agree with you. I think the it's so interesting, though. I've been, you know, this is my 20th year in the game, and I've seen so many different things change, and I've seen the, you know, the ivory tower advisor with the, you know, the big square desk with the person on the other side, and he's all suited up and he has all the information. And, you know, I've seen things evolve. And I think something you're saying that's really key is this person, whoever's wanting to do this, whether you want to go more traditional CFP and, you know, suited up, whatever, or you want to go, you know, t-shirt and jeans on a weekend, talk about financial subjects. Either way, I think, like you said this earlier, you got to be true to yourself. You got to stay true to who you are and who you're trying to serve too. Like, I'm pretty sure you've gone across this and ran across this. Like, what helped your identity? Cause I love the red t-shirt with the, I love that. I'm like, she's being true. She's so true to herself and staying that way. Like, what are some of the things that you had to go through in your mind in order to be like, all right, I'm just going to be Whitney. Forget it.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's two things. So part of this is cultivated brand, the persona I want people to recognize me for. So am I 100% authentic? No. I cuss a lot more in my real life. I try to tone it back in my personal brand, just honest.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of things that I would say at home that I would never put out in public. So I think that's the important piece to know is you have to curate your brand. So the brand that I chose to cultivate was the highlighted side of me where I'm goofy, I'm playful, I like to have a good time, but I can also get really serious and dive into the numbers. And so that was the piece that I wanted people to know. But more than anything, I wanted it to be approachable because my target audience are millennials 25 to 35 that are scared to death and have a lot of debt and feel overwhelmed. So if I'm that person that feels that way, I need something that's going to be approachable and somebody that's not going to make me feel like crap about my situation. And so that for me, it was thinking through if I were in that situation, what kinds of people would I want to chat with? It's not going to be the ultra buttoned up person that has the suit and tie and never talks about ever failing with money. It's somebody that is very honest and approachable. And so I'm really careful about that when I do my personal brand. It's not for everyone. I'm probably not going to get hired by Goldman Sachs to do public speaking for them. That's okay. I'll get hired by universities. That's okay too. But I think it's really important to know, what is your target audience like and what do they need? And then show up as that person if it truly is authentically you.
Thanks for taking the time with me today to listen. Just one quick question before we continue. Have you subscribed to my YouTube channel yet? If you haven't, I want to give you just one more reason to subscribe. Each week, I'm going to be sharing what I've learned in 20 plus years in the industry so that you can reach your goals faster. How's that? Now back to this week's episode. Yeah, so talk about if you're, and I know this is probably okay with you because I was just talking to another guest on the podcast. Talk about that self-work. As an entrepreneur, I've talked to a lot of people. I'm like, first of all, you're not yet entrepreneurial material. And that doesn't mean I'm necessarily an expert. It's just, to me, there's some self-work you have to do before you go down this path because it's so lonely.
Just a little bit.
Am I understating?
It is so lonely. Yeah, totally, totally understating. Which we laugh, right? Because we're like, we're in it. But yeah, no, I think for entrepreneurship, it is very difficult. I have very strong opinions on this too. It's incredibly difficult, not because it's a hard thing to do. I think starting a business is actually pretty dang easy. The concepts are super, super simple. Have a solution to somebody's problem and sell it. Okay, that's it. The tough part is trying to speak their language and trying to get to a point where you actually understand their problems. That's the part that gets so hard. And then entrepreneurship in general is extra lonely because you feel like you're the only one going through this stuff, even though you're not. Nobody really is. We have plenty of people we can call on, but it does feel that way. So I think that's where mastermind groups come in, of just meeting with like-minded people, not necessarily in your industry. In fact, I encourage you to go outside of your industry. I think you get different perspectives. And then more than that, just understand that entrepreneurship is not something that's going to happen overnight. Growing an amazing business that supports you and your family or whatever it is, it's going to take time, a lot of time and a lot of patience. And you have to work on your mindset every single day or you will quit. My first year of business, I think my fiance was so sick of me because every about 15th of the month, middle of the month, I quit my business in my head probably a million times. Every single time I'm like, oh, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. This is too hard. It's too awful. And I think we all go through this, but you just have to stick it out and just be patient and work on your mindset big time because you can, everything is very figure outable, as Marie Forleo says. You can figure this out if you just put together the plan, treat every little business decision as an experiment. Did it pass? Did it fail? Pivot, move forward, and just keep going and try to have a good time with it. I think it's really a fun process if you allow yourself to have fun with it. Worst case scenario, you have to go back to work and get a great job making six figures. Big deal. Like, it's not really that big of a deal at the end of the day.
First world problems, as I call them.
Serious.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the actual, if you can be successful at this coaching thing, mm-hmm. Or as an advisor, I like to bring the umbrella of financial professional in, and under those, we have several different, you know, facets or faces that this can take, but specifically the financial counseling and the financial coaching. And let me draw a real clear line for anybody that's listening, because you brought this up earlier. So with a financial advisor, financial planner, especially someone that's going to be regulated, if you give investment advice, if the client's understanding of how you're helping them constitutes financial or investment advice, you're going to have to be regulated.
Absolutely.
And each state is a little different, but that's the line that, you know, you really don't want to toe, because if you get caught doing it, it's pretty expensive. But that being said, if you're going to be on the financial coach side, stay with the financial, the planning, the budgets, the debt pay down, things of that nature. Talk about some of the technology or mm-hmm. I don't know, the disruptors, if you will, the ways that you're maybe doing your business that's disrupting the industry. I'll throw this out there. I don't know if you know now, but Charles Schwab offers $300 down and $30 a month for ongoing financial advice. So I was telling my financial advisor friends, I'm like, dude, that model you have, you need to rethink that.
Absolutely.
The big guys are coming into the space, and we've been saying it for a few years, but now they're here.
Yeah, some of the disruptors that I'm seeing is in New York, there's a company called The Financial Gym. And I've been following this one very closely because I'm very fascinated with the business model. And essentially how it works is you pay a monthly membership fee, much like a gym membership, and you go in there and you have a coach that sits there and helps you with every little area of your life. Now, the cool thing is it's in person. And we're starting to see that even though people are willing to do online coaching, they still want that humanized interaction. And so I think that's an interesting piece to note. But that's a cool model if it would work for you. The other models that I'm seeing that are really successful are group coaching, where instead of just working with people one-on-one, you can have 10 people in a group and almost that peer-to-peer support. That's an interesting model. And then ultimately, I think the solution that will win that we all have to figure out how to do is how do you provide individual coaching and give people the one-on-one attention that they need for a decent price at scale? That's the tricky piece. So I haven't seen any models do a great job of that other than hiring assistant coaches and training the trainer, so to speak. That model I think can work here, but that's what people are looking for, is a little bit more humanized. So I think that's the models that we're starting to see become up and coming.
Yeah, I think you make some good points. I'm going to have a guest on later on that's done some great work out of Omaha with the Financial Hope Collaborative. And she's all grant funded, but she does the group coaching essentially.
Sweet.
With particularly with low income single moms, which is a demographic that needs so much help. But typically my that's not my average client, right? You know, that's not who I talk to. And that's part of the reason that I'm doing this, is because I see so many gaps where you have you got to have $500,000 or $1 million and up for me to even talk to you, the type of deal. And then these are all these people that still need help. So I'm glad that, you know, you're sharing your information and things like this are getting out so that we get more people into the industry, which is what we need. Speaking of that, what are some qualities and characteristics you've seen of like really successful financial coaches?
Being incredibly kind and empathetic. I think this is everything. We have a lot of very loud voices from financial gurus that are not so kind and empathetic and make you feel like crap. And when people are hiring a coach, they want that sternness, but they don't want to feel like garbage after every single call. So I think you have to be able to be empathetic and understand where they're coming from. The second characteristic I think that you have to have as a good financial coach is you have to be willing and able to get into the weeds on that day to day. You have to call people out on their transactions. You have to hold them accountable. I think those are the characteristics that a good financial coach will see. You don't have to know all the answers. I don't know all the answers. When somebody approaches me about a scenario that I have no clue about, I will tell them, I don't know about this, but I will do some research and I'll get back to you. And if I can't figure it out, I'll point you to somebody that can. And so I think those are all of the humbleness that comes with that too, of being able to say, I don't know, I'm not a pro here, but I can send you to somebody that is. Those are the characteristics I think makes for a good financial coach.
Yeah, you hint on something too, because even with me being the face of my business, being the, you know, the point man, I still have this network of people that behind me help with all this stuff. Like, I don't do everything. So I think that's just important to keep in mind, maybe as, you know, not to be intimidating for somebody that's like, well, I can't do this on my own. Well, you don't have to do it on your own. You build a great network of competent individuals and you utilize that network.
Absolutely. So yeah. For a financial coach, it's what financial advisors do I trust that I would send my client to? Who would be a good fit here? You will definitely need to get in touch with some counselors. Who's a good marriage therapist? Who can I send my people to? So I think it's getting to, you build your own connection, of course, local and nationally, and see who do you want to refer people to? And that will come back to you as well. But I think it's really important to stay in your lane and not try to feel like you have to do all things for all people. Be the expert at a few really key things and then send them off to somebody else that's better than you at the others.
Yeah, I agree. So winding it up here, I like to play this little game here every once in a while to kind of just see what is on people's mind.
That's scary, right?
I know. Huh? kind of a rapid fire, but in a little different format. If I say this phrase, like kind of what does come to mind for Whitney? Financial literacy.
Education.
Okay. Economic empowerment.
Ooh, economic empowerment. Saving comes to mind for me.
Okay. Vacation.
Necessity. Is that the wrong answer? That's what I really feel.
I love it. No, that's the beauty about this is like every once in a while, you know, you come across an answer where you're like, okay, yeah, I can feel that. I get that. Necessity.
It's true.
I get that. Well, cool. Let's talk about how people can connect with you. If they're watching this, obviously you've got the podcast, you've got some different things going on. Tell us what you've got going on maybe in the next 3 to 4 months and how we can support you.
Yeah, the best place to go is the Money Nerds podcast. Go search it. It's everywhere podcasts are found. That's where I'm sending most people these days. But if you want to come hang out and get a little bit more of the weirdness and quirkiness of my brand, Instagram is where I'm at. It's at Whitney_Hansen_co. Huge pain in the butt, but that's where I like to hang out.
Very good. Very good. Well, we will definitely be watching and hanging out with you. And I'm pretty sure we'll cross paths. We're in the same industry. We've got to get together because it's two things that I think about this industry for as long as I've been doing it. The first is it's the relationships that you build, which dovetails into a saying that my friend always says is that your network is your net worth. Right. So having those people, good people that you can, you know, bounce ideas off of and see what they're doing and, you know, get different perspectives. I really appreciate that for what you bring to the industry. So I appreciate that.
Well, likewise, I appreciate what you bring to the industry, too, because it's not always easy. But we all need good advisors out there. We really do.
Very good. Well, Whitney, thank you for participating today. And I wish you luck in all that you're doing over there in the Pacific Northwest.
That's interesting.
Good job. Connection here. I'm a military brat, and my dad spent 22 years in the service, and his first tour was in Fort Lewis, Washington.
Oh, for real? Crazy. That's a great place to be.
Yeah, I haven't been back since, but...
right, exactly how it goes.
Those were many years spent in therapy trying to get over moving every 3.5 years as a teenager.
I can imagine. I would need that too. That's pretty rough.
yeah. Well, good stuff, Whitney. I appreciate your time today and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend. It would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.